It's Friday, May 29th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Hey Stashers, Radical Russ here. You are listening to a best of the Daily Audio Stash for the week of May 26, 2009. We're getting ready for the Aspen Legal Seminar on June 4th, 5th, and 6th, so we're going to have some downtime here at the Stash. We're bringing back some of your favorites from the previous Daily Audio Stashes over the past 14 months, so you're going to get a little bit of reefer madness, some stupid stoner stories, some great cannabis science from Dr. Mitch Earlywine, and some of my favorite songs from the Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com. I'll have plenty of live information coming from Aspen Legal Seminar over the weekend of June 4th, 5th, and 6th, audio and video to be posted later. Thank you so much for understanding. Keep up on the blog at stash.normal.org. I'll be posting somewhat infrequently during these next couple of weeks, but if there's any new breaking news stories, you'll find them there on the Stash. We'll be back with all original shows on Monday, June 8th, 2009. So sit back and enjoy the best of your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Michigan opponents say, "Don't fall for medical marijuana," from the Detroit Free Press.
The state of Michigan is currently under attack by the pro-drug lobby in its attempts to legalize marijuana as so-called medicine.
The pro-drug lobby? Nobody on our side makes the argument that we're pro-drugs. We argue that drugs are neither good nor evil, but that the policies we have concerning drugs are causing a great deal of harm. It's not my position that anyone should smoke pot. I'm just saying nobody should be harassed for it. Oh, and as for so-called medicine, I guess so is shorthand for the American Academy of Family Physicians, the American Medical Student Association, the American Nurses Association, the American Society of Addiction Medicine, the British Medical Association, the French Ministry of Health, Health Canada, the National Academy of Sciences Institute of Medicine, the New England Journal of Medicine, and the state nurses associations in Alaska, California, Colorado, Connecticut, Hawaii, Illinois, Mississippi, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, North Carolina, Rhode Island, Virginia, and Wisconsin, who have all come to the defense of medical marijuana and said that, yes, marijuana does have medical efficacy and should be used by the people who need it.
Medical marijuana is a Trojan horse for legalizing the drug itself and for making it available without regard to medical science. The real issue is public safety and the staggering effect this initiative could have on children and families residing in Michigan.
I love the Trojan horse argument. This line of reasoning says that those of us who smoke pot are using cancer and AIDS patients so we can legalize weed for everybody. First of all, no cancer or AIDS patient I've met has ever complained about us fighting for their right to use medical marijuana. Second, if I believe healthy people should be allowed to smoke pot, how could I not support its use by sick people? And finally, the Trojan horse argument says that we have to oppose helping cancer and AIDS patients because some healthy people might get high. It's kind of like saying we can't sell spray paint anymore because some people use it for graffiti.
As parents struggle to keep their children drug-free, it is important that they arm themselves with the facts. This dangerous initiative is loaded with unintended negative consequences. According to the Office of Applied Studies report titled State Estimates of Substance Use from the 1999-2006 National Surveys on Drug Use and Health, the states that have legalized marijuana as a so-called medicine continuously rank in the top 10 for the highest recorded marijuana use for adolescents in the 12 to 17 age category. Do not condemn the youths of Michigan to the same statistics.
Nothing entertains me more than the selective use of statistics. First of all, could it be that the states that have medical marijuana were already states where there is more marijuana use and acceptance? Because otherwise, those medical marijuana laws might never have gotten passed. Now, our good friend Dr. Mitch Earlywine studied this very phenomenon and found that, quote, in every state for which there's data, teen marijuana use has gone down since the medical marijuana law was passed, often a much larger decline than nationally, end quote. Now, use of marijuana by ninth graders in California, for example, decreased 47% in the 10 years following passage of Prop 215. Overall, declines in teen marijuana use in the 11 medical marijuana states for which data are available have slightly exceeded national trends.
The passage of Proposal 1 would also have other direct and significant unintended consequences to the citizens of Michigan. The amount of marijuana this proposal would allow individuals to possess would create disastrous public safety issues, such as an increase in drug driving, marijuana in the workplace, and the creation of neighborhood pot clubs.
There's no evidence at all of increases in the 12 medical marijuana states of incidents of cannabis-impaired driving or marijuana in the workplace. Whatever that means. I mean, what, people bring in their stash to work and lighting up on break? Or does the writer refer to people who use marijuana being employed in the workplace? Or is it more failed pee tests? I don't know. In Oregon, workplace fatalities and lost workdays from injury have declined since medical marijuana's advent in 1998, and DUI incidents and fatalities have dropped too.
If passed, this proposal would allow a so-called caregiver to supply up to 5 patients at a given time, allowing them to possess 60 plants and 12.5 ounces of usable marijuana. An environment that has this amount of marijuana available is known as a grow house or pot dispensary. Dispensaries and grow houses have led to increased crime and violence in communities.
Yeah, I like the idea of a dispensary with just 12.5 ounces worth of product. It's intentionally misleading to say dispensary in the Michigan case, since their proposition gives nobody the right to sell marijuana like the California dispensaries. A grow house is a bit of a stretch too, as the writer is trying to tie this 60-plant medical marijuana grow site to the horror stories of the tens of thousands of plants in some commercial black market grow house. Plus, you just gotta love the use of the scare quotes around the word patient, as if the five people with AIDS, cancer, hepatitis, MS, and glaucoma who would benefit from this crop are somehow opportunistic fakers.
Marijuana is an illegal drug, and admittedly, it makes some people feel good. That is what drugs do. They make you feel good. That does not make legitimate medicine. If Michigan makes an exception for those who claim smoked marijuana is medicine, it will open the door to widespread marijuana use and fraudulent claims of illness for all drug users.
This is the kind of thinking you get from someone who believes drugs themselves are evil. I would argue that a drug you take that makes you feel good, with no harmful lasting side effects, is a medicine. What is it you want medicine to do? Make you feel worse? This is where the prohibitionist will rant, "Well, I feel good when I drink whiskey. Let's make wild turkey a medicine. Smoking crack feels good. It's a medicine too." Well, are you shooting whiskey and smoking crack to treat an ailment? Shyness and depression, perhaps? And afterward, do you feel a lasting negative side effect? Now, do you want to compare that to marijuana, or shall I? Not only can I show you more benefit and less harm from social pot use than alcohol or cocaine, I can show you more benefit and less harm from medical marijuana use than from synthetic Marinol or conventional opioids. Michiganders, don't fall for the hype against medical marijuana. None of the 12 current medical marijuana states want to repeal it, and some have had these laws in place for over a decade.
Stupid Stoner Stories.
As a public service, Normal reminds you that smoking marijuana will not make one stupid. However, some stupid people do smoke marijuana. Don't be one of those stoners that make the rest of us look bad. Learn your lesson from today's
Stupid Stoner Story.
A loyal stasher forwarded me a video clip from a police dash cam. You can see the whole clip up on stash.normal.org. The audio is funny enough in itself. Just use your imagination.
What's going on, Steve? Yeah. You call 911?
Yeah, you're crazy. She's throwing. I'm crazy. Yeah, you're crazy. She's here. You better come out. I told you she's coming. What's y'all fighting about this time? Man, she's throwing stuff all around the damn house, kicking stuff around. I'm sick of this. This is my house. My house. I'll do whatever I want to. She throws, hit me in the face with a damn bong.
A bong? Well, yeah, I thought I'm like, hey, you know, the vacuum's been sitting out there for two weeks. Why don't you do something productive?
Yeah, he's out here. Yes, bring it.
Sick of this.
You better take her. I'm gonna talk to her. I'm done. What you smoking?
Steve, you smoking marijuana right in front of me?
Man, come on. This is my house. I can't smoke a little damn weed in my own house.
No, you can't.
Yeah, this is the last one. You're right. Yeah, it's yours too. Yeah.
Steve, put that out right there. Come on.
No, I called you.
Steve, put that out. You come with me. Come on.
You came to get her. Let me go get her.
I'm going to talk to her in just a minute, though. But right now, you're coming with me for smoking marijuana. Put that down.
I can't. This is my house.
Steve, I'm going to ask you one more time. Put that down.
Let me go get her, because that's why you came.
Steve, come on.
All right, fine. I'll put the joint up. Can't wait.
Steve, come on.
Let me go. God dang it. I know what. Lord, Jesus Christ.
Put your hands behind your back.
I told you.
Put your hands behind your back.
I told you. This ain't right. I know my rights.
If you're new to the stash, you might wonder why I post a story about a stupid cannabis user. Am I trying to make us look bad? No. As I say at the intro, marijuana does not make one stupid. However, some stupid people do smoke marijuana. Unfortunately, they get a disproportionate amount of camera time. Well, actually, that's untrue. Plenty of smart, productive, normal people who use cannabis responsibly get camera time. You just don't know they are pot smokers. They have jobs to think of. The point is to show what is unacceptable as a responsible adult consumer, or to highlight an unfortunate incident that could be avoided by being responsible. It's a teachable moment, as they call it these days. In my day, we just called it hard knocks. Some people, though, are just plain stupid. They'd be as stupid sober, but they end up on camera high. When you're out there as a proud cannabis activist, remember that it takes 10 of us working twice as hard all year to be taken seriously for every 2-minute clip of a guy like this at the tail end of your evening news with snickering news anchors wrapping it up before Wheel of Fortune. Represent.
There were 765,000 marijuana arrests in 2007. That's not for dealers and kingpins, no, that's just for simple possession. Multiply that by the average cost of each arrest, and what have you got? $7.6 billion spent on people just smoking some pot. That's enough money to buy health insurance for every child that needs it. That's enough cash to adopt every stray dog and enough left over to feed it. Mr. Obama, I kinda wrote this song for you. You got my vote for change. Now let's see what you can do.
Visit normal.org today. The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards.
Señoras y señores, directamente de Chicago, Illinois, Los Marihuanos. ¡Aplauso, aplauso!
I guess it's time to get high.
It's time to get high.
It's time to get high.
I said it's time to get high.
I said it's time to get high.
I said it's time to get high.
It's time to get high.
Yeah.
It's time to get high.
Roll up the spliff, I shoot the gift. Like cannabis sativa, I am blip. Get the freestyling when I get the smoking. If it's true skunk, then homie, I'm choking. I pass it on. I pass it on. Like Cheech and Chong. Yeah. Now I'll take a hit from the bong, like Cypress Hill. So what's the deal, homie, chill? Los marihuanos come real. So recognize, realize, legalize, and keep your eyes on the prize, so you can keep on smoking them trees. Take a big hit to drop you on your knees. True G's, recognize the flame from the rag. Roll up the buds with the orange zigzags. I cannot lie, I wanna fly, I wanna fly. I guess it's time to get high.
I guess it's time to get high.
It's time to get high.
Time to get high.
I said it's time to get high.
It's time to get high.
I said it's time to get high.
It's time to get high.
Yeah.
It's time to get high.
Oh, should I say blaze? I got that true Buddha to put you in a daze. I raise my bowl to the air.
You pack it in, I pack it in, don't stare, homie, share. Muchate, don't say as greedy. Motherfucking pack the true butts to the needy. Yes, indeedy. I pack it in a bowl, roll it in the paper, and pop in the CMB taper. Now let's ride, cruise, you can't lose. Who's got the dollar for the booze? I got five on it, got it good. Do what I could, say what? Support the hood. I got bass, beats, and the rhymes. Educate myself when I read the Hind Times. Look at my watch, 420, oh my. Spark up the joint, it's time to get high. Time to get high.
Una jalada de esta mota, vato, y te pones como araña, loco. Eres pecado. Párate, cabrón.
I guess it's time to get high.
It's time to get high.
It's time to get high.
I said it's time to get high.
I get the cutting up the blunts. I got that box of swishers, so homies don't front. Hydroponic, bubonic, supersonic. It's ironic how he's up on it. True skills from the east. Attacking like a beast.
Yeah.
Eating up suckers like a feast. Booyah, pony boy coming to ya. Busting through ya. Punk, I never knew ya. So act like you know. Go ahead and plant the seed and let it grow. Let it grow. Let's smoke up a pound. Cause you know the marijuanos are down.
Right.
It's time to say goodbye. But with the words of wisdom, it's time to get high. Get up, he came with you.
Fuck.
Get the fuck out, you're taking him home. Hey, dog, you gotta get up.
Get up.
Come on, dog, you gotta get up. You can't handle that flame.
No,
I don't know why you came.
No,
marijuanos, home. Come on. All right, now. All right. Scrounge's gonna take you home. Yeah, fire up that flame. Come on, Ivan, man. Pass some papers. It's time to get high. Yes, sir. Let's go. We out of here, dog. Let's go.
Percent of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and co-workers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid and which claims
are reefer madness?
Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with NORML's look at
cannabis science.
All right, well, as we do every Wednesday here on The Stash, we're going to turn to Dr. Mitch Earlywine, who's an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany. And Mitch, welcome back to The Stash.
Great to be on The Stash.
Well, I guess you're probably going to have a lot of students that are coming back from spring break over this past weekend. And one of the things that we're always fighting against here when we're talking about marijuana stereotypes is the stereotype of the amotivational syndrome. So how hard is it going to be for these students to be able to get back to work after having toked a little of the reefer?
In fact, it shouldn't be hard at all. I'm really pleased, Russ, to say that study after study is really turn this amotivation idea aside. It's to the point now where if I try to publish work on motivation in marijuana users and show that there really isn't any amotivation, the journals aren't even interested anymore. They think that this is pretty obvious. Kasner has some wonderful data from the economics literature showing that people who use cannabis are no more likely to have sick days or take more sick leave or earn less money or pay less taxes or anything along those lines. And actually, one of his studies had a mild positive correlation suggesting that folks who made more money actually were the ones who were using more marijuana, at least among the men. I don't think that smoking pot's a good way to get a raise. I just think people who had money probably could afford more pot.
Yeah, that's probably true, especially with the prices the way they are these days. Now, now, as far as these motivational factors go, I've heard some people say that part of the reason why we get these good results in these statistics and these surveys on motivation has to do with the fact that the marijuana is illegal. That it's illegal causes people to have to keep their nose clean and stay above board and try to be, you know, extra good at work and extra motivated. Whereas if it were a legal substance like tobacco or alcohol, then people would probably slack off more. Is there any way of testing that theory?
As you can imagine, any of the ways we could test it would either run into ethical problems or just become so impractical that it's ridiculous. But some of the closest things we've done is just to ask in surveys, if marijuana were legal, would you smoke it or would you smoke more, or things along those lines. Folks who don't smoke marijuana rarely express some kind of new interest in smoking it if it were suddenly legal. And at least one survey with over 1,000 people has suggested that. And sometimes folks try to compare countries that have more marijuana use to countries that have less marijuana use and look at their various measures of productivity. And it doesn't seem to show up in a very clear pattern, so that there are countries with, outrageously prohibitive policies, like, you know, Malaysia or somewhere like that, where, you know, you're going to get your hand cut off or get an outrageous beating if you have marijuana, and they don't seem to be markedly more productive than countries that have higher rates of marijuana or more lenient policies. The Netherlands is a prime example. The work ethic is splendid there, and it's a very productive and wonderful country. And the U.S. tends to be somewhere in between there with some decriminalization states and some areas where penalties are relatively minor. Those states and those areas don't seem to have any change in economic costs or in healthcare costs or amount of time people miss work or anything along those lines to suggest that there's some kind of tacit amotivation that's going to come out once cannabis laws change.
Yeah, I my theory on this whole amotivational syndrome, I think Chrissy Hynde from The Pretenders said something similar to this at one point, which was the thing with marijuana is it makes whatever you're doing seem okay. And the problem is that even if you're sitting around doing nothing, that seems okay. That may be more to blame for this idea of amotivation than anything.
Craig Reinerman did a wonderful thing in his chapter in my book, Pot Politics, explaining that some folks use marijuana as an opportunity to kind of lay their work down and say, okay, now I'm high, I really don't have to work. And in sort of workaholic cultures like ours, this may actually be pretty adaptive. The idea that somebody would suddenly value family and fun time more than actually cranking out a buck is hardly a syndrome or a psychological problem so much as a sign of a balanced life, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and you know, when we look at the figures of how many people are using marijuana, and you mentioned some of the figures of the more upper income may have better access to marijuana or whatever, I've also always thought that if you were going to be the kind of person who was going to use an intoxicating substance and you did your homework and tried to figure out which one would be the least harmful for you, maybe that is what leads more people toward marijuana.
It's funny how actually the data on alcohol and some of these negative consequences related to motivation are pretty compelling. The stimulant drugs are also real bad with amotivation and apathy and things along those lines. And now at least one study, unpublished but that I've seen for review, suggests cigarettes may also be linked to some at least lower achievement in a couple of different domains. So, yeah, it seems unlikely that marijuana would be the lone one to blame. And, in fact, when you start looking around at negative consequences, it's clearly the one that would have an opportunity to be legal that would make more sense than any of these other drugs.
Yeah, I know when I was out working in the corporate workplace and I would hear these, the scare stories about marijuana and amotivation and lack of productivity, I used to look outside at the smoking shelter and all of my coworkers who were out there for 15 minutes at a time every 2 hours, and I thought, you're talking to me about productivity?
Exactly.
Now, speaking of productivity for the students who are coming back from spring break, they might have had the opportunity to use some marijuana over the spring break, and now they need to get their heads back into their college work, their difficult terms. What can people do after they've had a long vacation of involving some partying to get themselves back on track, get their minds clear? Is the marijuana going to have too long of a deleterious effect on their ability to study?
We don't see a lot of evidence for any kind of marijuana-related hangover, and I think the key sometimes in getting back is often trying to bite off more than you can chew. So people come back that first Monday and say, okay, now I'm going to whip it back into shape, and I'm going to study 11 hours today and things like that. And that's often really unrealistic, and then people get discouraged when they can't do it and then end up having what I call the abstinence violation effect in reverse. They basically say, well, I couldn't do 11 hours yesterday, so never mind, I'm not going to do it at all now. In fact, if you ease yourself back in a few hours here, a few hours there, and gradually build back up, you'll be pleased to see not only is it going well, but you'll remember why you took these classes in the first place, and that maybe you even like some of these topics, and that some of the work is inherently interesting. And that's your big opportunity to reconnect with what got you excited about an education in the first place, what got you excited about this work in the first place, and then you'll be very pleased to find that you can get right back on schedule. The thing I am finding is I'm not seeing folks keeping up with their date book afterwards, so it's often as simple as making sure you write down and budget the time to get the work done, and then I see all the things that people have going on. I know it's difficult. It's amazing how literally 15 minutes on a Sunday planning out the subsequent week can make things go so much better than trying to do it catch-as-catch-can starting every morning.
Yeah, as busy as our students' lives are these days, I can't see how they could get away with not planning things out. There's just too much going on these days. And speaking of too much going on, one of the other avenues where we always have to focus our attention with Dr. Earlywine here is on the studies that come out to purport these harms of marijuana, to beat the drums of reefer madness. And one of these studies that just came out, Dr. Earlywine and I were talking about before the interview here, had to do with marijuana and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And let's tell everyone about what they've found and what might be wrong with that survey.
I'm sure a lot of your listeners, Russ, are on top of the idea that adult attention deficit and hyperactivity disorder is getting diagnosed more often. We're capable of recognizing it more. And it's generally this inability to control impulses or to pay attention to tasks on long term, those kinds of things. And this is a wonderful study that actually did a really good job of following people across their lives and looking at their cannabis use and their symptoms of these attention deficit problems. And at first blush, it looks like, oh my goodness, cannabis use is significantly associated with self-reported adult symptoms of attention deficit problems. But what I like about what these researchers did is then they went ahead and said, wait, let's take the effect of all these other illicit drugs out and then see what happens. And sure enough, once you take out the ecstasy, the cocaine, crack cocaine, some of the opiates, methamphetamine, of course, and things along those lines, once those impacts are eliminated, suddenly the link between cannabis and ADHD disappears. I realize I'm at risk for upsetting a few people who use cannabis medicinally to treat their ADHD, and there seems to be a subset of folks who really do benefit from that. But even if that's not for everybody, clearly cannabis is not the source of ADHD symptoms in these folks in a really impressive study of over 1,000 New Zealand folks.
Well, that's good to know that one more marijuana myth that we can debunk. And, the physicist Carl Sagan, astronomer Carl Sagan, once had a saying where I think he wrote it in his books, Dragons of Eden, where he had postulated on the idea of the pygmies being a tribe of people that were completely hunter-gatherers, and the only crop that they would ever tend to was a ganja crop. And his theory here was that for them to be the patiently stalking these lizards and such in the jungle that would take hours and hours of stalking, that the only way they could sit through it was through ganja intoxication. And Sagan noted it would be kind of ironic if agriculture and society basically grew up over the need to cultivate ganja. I always thought it was an interesting theory, but whenever I think about attention and attention deficit, I think back to that quote.
Well, I don't know if you've ever had corn right off the stalk, but I would much prefer cannabis plant to that.
I would too, definitely. Well, thank you, Dr. Earlywine, for joining us as you do every Wednesday. And let's remind everyone also that they can still get a copy of Parents' Guide to Marijuana that is out on shelves now and available at Amazon.com. Is there a website for that, Mitch?
The Amazon site now has it on sale for a dollar off or something like that. And really plug in local bookstores. So if you have a local bookstore and they don't have it, be sure to ask them to order it. I really want to support those guys.
And we'll have the links to the Amazon site up at our blog at stash.normal.org. Mitch, thanks for joining us again today.
Always a pleasure.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org. Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. Thanks for tuning in to this Best of Normal Daily Audio Stash episode. We really appreciate it and remind you that we'll be back with new shows on June 8, 2009. In the meantime, get involved. Join Normal at NORML.org today. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.